From Radio Catskills Studios in Liberty, New York, this is The Local Edition, and I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for joining me. Coming up, Friday's Juneteenth, and the Sullivan County NAACP is holding their Juneteenth Festival at Hanafy Park in Liberty. They'll have vendors, music, barbecue, and much more. Radio Catskills' Rebecca Hendricks will get all the details from Star Torbert, chairwoman of the Sullivan County NAACP, coming up in the second half of the program. We also continue with our candidate interviews ahead of New York's primary election. Tonight we meet the second of two candidates vying for the Republican Party's nomination to represent New York's 19th Congressional District, candidate Alexander Portelli. Kimberly Izar talks to him coming up in just a moment. But first, we do have an update on energy issues in New York State. The agency that monitors every watt of electrical energy that flows through New York State is warning that there's less power in the system and more need for power than ever before. For more, here's Dave Bullard with the New York Public News Network.
Every time I turn on the air conditioning, watch TV, or charge my phone, I'm using power. Each of us is at the final stop of a complex system of power that links the places where it's made to the systems and lines that transmit it, and finally, to you and me. In the center of it all is a nonprofit group called the New York Independent System Operator. The people at the New York ISO are the air traffic controllers of energy in the state. They watch every watt of power, and they have a message.
The electric grid is at an inflection point.
That's Senior Vice President Kevin Lanahan of the ISO.
We need to build new resources because our energy reserves are declining to a point where we have great concerns, especially when demand is like what we experienced last June during the heat wave or last February during the deep freeze.
Older power plants are shutting down and there's not enough new power coming in to fill the gap. The heat wave last June and past winter's unusually long cold snap forced the ISO to buy out-of-state power and ask big power users to conserve. The margin of reserve power used to be adequate, but it's fallen by about 80% in just a handful of years. Extreme weather remains a risk, and the potential growth of power-devouring data centers provides a new risk. There's good news in that wind and home-based solar power are both on the upswing, but the ISO believes bigger, steadier sources are necessary.
The best day to have built a new nuclear plant was 10 years ago. The second best day is today, and they're moving forward aggressively to figure that out.
For the New York Public News Network, I'm Dave Bullard.
Thank you to the New York Public News Network for that report. It's election 2026, and Radio Catskill continues its candidate interview series ahead of New York's primary election. Primary day is a week from today, and early voting's already underway. And right now, we're going to meet Alexander Portelli, a Republican candidate running for Congress in New York's 19th Congressional District. Portelli is seeking the Republican nomination in this primary race, and he's running against State Senator Peter Oberacker, the winner of that primary. Is expected to move on to the general election against Democratic incumbent Josh Riley. Here's Radio Catskills' Kimberly Izar with Alexander Portelli.
So for voters who are just, you know, maybe getting to know you, who is Alexander Portelli and what led you to run for Congress?
I'm just a normal person. I'm not really any different from anyone else. You know, I'm just 36 years old. I've got a son. I work. I pay my taxes. And I think like most people, I'm pretty frustrated with politics and the state of a lot of things. And I don't like how we don't really get many options. And there's a lot of issues, I think, that are affecting people that candidates currently don't really talk about or try to avoid talking about. So I decided, I'll run and put my name on the ballot and see what happens. And it's actually kind of taken off. So it's been going well so far.
And talk to me a little bit about, your life experiences and how that's kind of shaped your decision to enter the race, your experiences from your life, your work, military service. And I know that your time in upstate New York.
Yes. Well, I grew up in the city of Albany, the capital of New York. It was, I went to public school and I dropped out when I was 14. It was really rough upbringing in the city of Albany back then in the school system. I went to work and, I'm an upstate teen, I was an upstate teen. I spent some time out west when I was in my 20s. I went out west and spent some time out there. You know, I got into real estate and I've done different business and whatnot. But after a while, I kind of missed New York State and came back. And yeah, you know, and I love it here. I love upstate. I love New York. I love our history. You know, the culture and the people, but it's also sad, you know, a lot of it's frustrating, especially if you grew up in New York and you think back at how things kind of used to be. And, you know, and I want to, apply these principles that I kind of believe in that I think we've kind of strayed from and, you know, and see if I can at least give it a voice in this race, or, you know, if I won, then I can fight for them. So it's pretty much me.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what you're hearing from New Yorkers. What are the top issues you're hearing about from Republican voters across the 19th congressional district?
Well, I think it's I think everybody has this Republican, Democrat, Independent. Everybody kind of has the same issues, and you know, it's people are struggling. You know, life is tough. You know, and I think it's tougher than it's been in a while, in a long time. Things are expensive. You know, inflation is out of control. It's tough to make money and to get decent work and pay, just paying your bills. And I think that, you know, politicians are totally out of touch with that, especially if they're career politicians and they've only spent their whole life kind of in politics. And it's frustrating and it's sad. No, honestly, there's a lot of sad stuff. You know, people can't figure out how to pay their bills. You know, it's just simple bills, you know, just even like a $300 utility bill or their car payment, you know, and people want to work. You know, there's people, it's not like people don't want to work, and people want jobs and just making a decent living, you know. And I think that's something that a lot of people are affected with. And that's just bipartisan easily. So Republican, Democrat, and everyone in between.
You talked about how expensive things are getting, and that's something that we hear often, just how affordability is such a major issue for so many New York families. What would you do in Congress to lower costs for people in the district?
Well, it's tough, you know, because in reality, it's like, what can you do when you get there? But I can say what I can fight for. I believe that, you know, right now we have a lot of inflation still. Inflation has been kind of runaway since COVID. And I believe that inflation is just, it's always will be caused by excess government spending, government printing money it doesn't have, you know, is the root cause of inflation. And they need to get the spending under control, you know, because technically it feels like, it's funny, people feel like they have no money, but there's more dollars in circulation than ever before in American history, because the government's just spending $2 trillion a year it doesn't have. The deficit is probably the largest it's ever been. And as long as the government is spending $7.4 trillion a year and only taking in $5.4 trillion, inflation is going to keep getting worse, you know, and affordability will keep getting worse. But politicians kind of don't want to address that because it requires facing harsh realities. They're just, the attitude is just kind of, well, let's just kick it down the curb, you know, let the millennials figure it out in 10 years. And that's not a solution. You know, so I think the biggest thing I could do is stand up to budget, you know, bills that don't balance the budget. That's the top priority, I think, from a congressional standpoint, is we have to balance the budget and get the debt down. And then we'll see affordability get better.
I know that energy costs have become a central part of your campaign. I'd love to just hear a little bit more about what would your energy plan look like in practical terms for New York residents?
Yes. Well, I mean, I advocate for, you know, the federal government kind of incentivizing rebuilding our energy infrastructure, you know, not corporate handouts, you know, because I'm totally against corporate handouts, but at least maybe like, you know, industrial loans, very low interest, federally backed to incentivize it. And we really need to reinvest in our energy infrastructure. And we haven't, you know, and we spend, you know, trillions of dollars a year all around the world, gallivanting around the world in all these different excursions. But we haven't built a hydropower dam in the entire United States since 1978. You know, it's like we're living on the energy infrastructure of a generation that built it that isn't even here anymore. You know, we don't invest in ourselves anymore. And I think that's a big priority, too, is getting the federal government to, let's stop focusing on all these other places and all these other countries and whatever the heck may be, whether it's peace or war. We have to kind of focus here at home and let's rebuild our energy infrastructure. I also go, although it's, you know, part of it is symbolic, but also part of it is a valid point. I go after NYSEG or National Grid or all these companies that have taken over the service and delivery aspect of it, you know, and it wasn't always like that. We have these foreign conglomerates that are running our energy grid. You know, we don't need them. I feel like New York State, though this or a lot of this requires, you know, stuff from Albany, but I work with, this is why I like to help good assembly candidates who agree with me. But, you know, I feel like New York State does it backwards in particular. They have, you know, power generation and production is kind of being done by the New York Power Authority, the state, which, you know, the state is not really good at producing things. States should not, you know, the state does just should stay away from production. But then they've given away service and delivery, which is a basic function of government that really I think government should do to foreign conglomerates, you know? And so that's the problem. They're kind of doing it backwards. So that's why I also say, you know, kick out NYSEG, kick out National Grid, because they are profiting on, you know, the suffering of our neighbors, you know, who can't pay their energy bills.
And you mentioned, you know, removing these foreign-owned companies from the state's power grid. How would that work exactly? And what would you propose to replace the current system?
Well, I don't think it's, I don't think it would be far-fetched at all, per se. You know, they're not entitled to handle delivery and servicing, you know, that's stuff, that those are contracts that are given to them. You know, I like the site. There's places in New York State that have the, you know, the places in New York State that have the cheapest energy bills. It's just local municipal utilities run it, handle the service and delivery. Plattsburgh has like Plattsburgh. I don't know what the utility service is, but Plattsburgh does its own public utility. And I'll say real quick, you know, I'm a Republican, but I'm not an anarchist. You know, it's not like we want no government. We want government to do things that it should be doing and focusing on the basics. And then let private sector do the other part, you know? And so Plattsburgh, they pay like 5 cents a kilowatt hour, you know, whereas the rest of New York, they're paying 25 cents. Delaware County, which is in the district, they have a co-op, you know, Green Island outside Troy, they do their own electricity, you know, service and delivery. And I don't know if it's still free, but they used to give out free energy, the electricity used to be free because they had the dam right there. You know, I think we need to reverse it. Public utilities, it could be county, municipal services, town, city, can buy the energy and handle service and delivery. It wouldn't be perfect, but at least there's more accountability to the voters. And, you know, and then we kind of have to free up private enterprise to invest in these other energy sources. You know, of course not, you know, everything is done safe and with regulation, but incentivize that, you know, hydropower. I do believe in nuclear energy. You know, and that's how we should do it. You know, I think it would work well.
Let's talk a little bit about, you know, economic opportunity for the state. The district includes many farms and small businesses, smaller towns and villages. From your perspective, what do you see as, you know, the biggest economic opportunity the district has potential for?
Well, you know, and from spending time around the United States and seeing other parts of the United States, it's like I do appreciate certain things in upstate we have. Like, look, we have water. We have lots of water. You know, I know water is a controversy with AI data centers now, but compared to out west, we have tons of water. You know, like I could go dig a hole and, you know, dig a few feet and I hit groundwater. You know, we have timber. We have fertile land, and those are all like the basic essentials to really having a prosperous society, you know? And I think that's something that in the past, if you go around the district or all of New York State, you know, that's why we flourished in the past, but we've kind of just gotten so out of hand and just so off track, you know, you know, we've lost a lot of that. So there's great potential, but you know, there's also a lot of hardship, you know, which there really doesn't need to be.
I wanted to also talk a bit about immigration and farm labor, because those are both important issues in rural New York.
I agree.
Curious, what is your approach to border security while also addressing, you know, workforce needs for farms and businesses?
Yeah. Well, I in the past, I kind of was very, I know I put out something too, but I was pretty strict with I do believe in a secure border. I do believe that it's good. You know, we have to have a process. In the past, I was like I kind of felt I wanted hard time, but you know, I mean, we need to have deterrence, but we don't have to be cruel. You know, we're humans. I also agree adamantly we need to reform the visa system, the H-1B visa system and the work visa system. I think that gets exploited even, you know, because I live in the country now and, I've got farmers all over. Farmers can't get help. You know, if you're a farmer, try to get help, you know, to do it's tough work and they can't even get help. I advocate that we should make a work visa for farm laborers just as simple as a 5-minute form, 1-page form, so they can bring in the help they need, because you're not going to find people to work our farms, unfortunately, anytime soon. But then the other thing, I feel like the H-1B visas do get used to exploit people and skip Americans. So you go to Walmart or Amazon, they're bringing in more foreign labor and migrant workers than anybody. You know, so the farms don't have anybody, and Walmart and Amazon is just that's all they do, because they can avoid, you know, it's a lot easier to hire somebody on a visa. And, you know, they're not going to complain so much if, let's say, there's labor violations, there's, you know, they can be exploited better. And it allows Walmart and Amazon to avoid hiring the unemployed person right down the road. You know, so I really think even with that, we do it backwards. You know, and if they couldn't hire somebody, well, they can raise their wages then and get somebody in, you know. So I would end it. I believe we should totally end it for those kind of industries. You know, the Walmart doesn't need to hire an H-1B visa worker. Amazon doesn't need to. Bezos doesn't need to hire an H-1B visa worker. But, you know, a farm, absolutely, it needs to be easier. So even with that process, I support reversing it.
Let's talk a little bit about the upcoming primaries and November, which is just a few months away. You are running against State Senator Peter Oberacker in the Republican primary this June. What do you think is the clearest difference between you and your opponent?
Keeping on the issues, with respect, he doesn't talk about anything. He doesn't talk about anything. And I'm sure he's a nice guy. I've met him once, you know, nothing bad against him. But, you know, we need to start holding our candidates for public office to a higher standard and knowing what they stand for and what their issues are, you know. And I'll answer questions, you know, I'll talk about issues. We talked about a lot of issues just now. But with him, I know he makes a barbecue sauce, but He doesn't talk about the issues that are really affecting voters, and he's not taking positions on things. When we need people in public office who are willing to, take bold positions more than anything, anytime ever, I think. So that's the biggest difference.
And if elected, what is one thing, you know, voters in the district can expect you to fight for in your first year in Congress?
I already imagine it would be so tough down there with those people. I think a lot of these people in politics are just evil after like encountering a lot of them, like they're so out of touch. But, you know, again, I'm going to fight for a balanced budget. That's a big thing, because that's like a kind of like a macro way to really help people. But then also I really believe in also federal spending cuts to give tax repeals to like working class Americans. You know, it's like we talk in the past, it's like, sometimes people like to talk about trickle down economics, but, you know, I believe in trickle up economics. You know, how can we like repeal taxes and shift the tax burden on the working and middle class America as much as possible? And when you go through the budget, you know, we're spending so much money now. I don't know where it all goes. We're spending so much money that you could really bring spending back to certain levels that it was when, like, you know, our government, the size of the Fed, to when you were born or I was born. I don't know how old you were, but you are, but when I was born at least. And we could give real tax repeals for working Americans like that, you know? So it's like the federal gas and diesel tax. Everybody's talking about, oh, let's suspend it. You know, we're going to suspend it, you know, because gas is so high. Look, the Fed only takes in $40 billion a year, I think it is, or something like that, from federal gas and diesel tax. $40 billion, we're spending $7 trillion. Just get rid of it. You know, like get rid of it. They can pull $40 billion to, you know, it goes to state highways. It gets sent back, allocated back to state road repair and highways. But they can pull that from somewhere else, you know, and just things that we can do to shift how we do taxes to ease the burden on people. you know? So those are the things I would fight for, because people need relief really bad.
That was Alexander Portelli, Republican candidate for New York's 19th Congressional District. The Republican primary is scheduled for June 23rd. Mr. Portelli, thank you again so much for chatting.
Thank you. Anytime.
Radio Catskills' Kimberly Izar speaking with Alexander Portelli, who's seeking the Republican Party nomination to run for Congress in New York's 19th District. We spoke to his opponent, State Senator Peter Oberacker, last night on the Local Edition. Both of these interviews, along with all of our election coverage and candidate conversations, are on Radio Catskills' election page at wjffradio.org. And you can watch these candidate interviews on our YouTube channel. See the candidates for yourself. Go to youtube.com, search Radio Catskill, and please subscribe, like, and share.
You're listening to the Local Edition, Radio Catskill. Listen local.
It is the Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole, and Friday is Juneteenth, the national holiday. And here in Sullivan County, the NAACP is once again bringing the community together for its annual Juneteenth Festival, happening at Hanafee Park in Liberty. For more, Radio Catskill reporter Rebecca Hendricks spoke with Star Torbert, chairwoman of Sullivan County NAACP.
Star, welcome to Radio Catskill.
Thank you so much, Rebecca. Hi.
Hi, Star. So can you just tell people at home who may not be familiar with Juneteenth, what does the holiday mean? What's the history there?
That is a very great question. Thank you for asking. So Juneteenth is a holiday commemorating the emancipation of enslaved African Americans in the United States. So that day, the Union troops arrived to Texas and they issued a general order and told that we were the enslaved people, that we were free that day and that, you know, we were set free. So I think that it's a very important day. I think that this is now considered a federal holiday as of recently within a couple of years. And I think it is great. And it's a great reminder to the Black community that how far we have come as people, and especially just the community in general, just the world, how far we have come as people.
What can people expect when they attend this year's Juneteenth Festival in Sullivan County?
Yes, they can expect a lot of great things. We have amazing performers. We have keynote speakers that are just these amazing people in the community. We have artists coming out to showcase their art. We have a live artist as well that's going to paint. We have bouncy houses. We have a dunk tank for kids. We have plenty of puzzles and bingo that are focused on Black history. We have a DJ. We just have amazing things that are just giving a platform to a lot of creative and successful leaders, Black leaders in the community. And we just wanted it to be a day of just celebration and just giving them that platform to also celebrate them and their achievements.
It sounds like it's going to be a big event. How has this event grown over the years?
Yes, it has grown a lot. I believe this is our fourth year doing the Juneteenth Festival. And every time I'm constantly reminded by the committee members, like, this is like, you don't understand how far we have come from just the beginning of how it was just small to now, which is growing years and years. And then also the beautiful thing is just the connections, being able to connect with new people, collaborating with new people, and just even building off of the partnerships that we had in the past and just them seeing how far we still continue to come. So.
And speaking of community partnerships, what role do they play in organizing an event like this?
They play huge roles. It really depends on who is helping out. You have some people that are just there to even just help us donate food, which is great because this is like a free program that we want for the community. So you have people that are doing that. You have people that are just coming to even just help us promote the event, which is amazing. I mean, promotion is always great to get the word out. You also have people that are just even offering their time and expertise, because sometimes it's not even like the material things they can provide, but also just the advice, because the advice is always needed, even if it's just like, hey, I can't do that, but I can connect you with somebody that can. And overall, it's just a beautiful experience.
And how does Juneteenth bring people from different backgrounds together?
That is a great question. I think it brings people together because it's a community event and it's centered around looking at it from the past till now. And I think that's important as a society because we have come a very, very long and far way from the past to now. And just we want to emphasize that of bringing the community together and celebrating this moment of freedom and celebrating this moment of even creating bonds and togetherness. And I just want to make sure that it's emphasized that everybody is welcomed. We are coming together. We are holding our hands together and we are saying, hey, we are here today, and it's power in numbers. So
what do you hope that children and young people take away from attending this event?
I hope they take away the experience of getting to experience history and culture in a different way rather than just sitting in the classroom and being just told, you know, what history is or what Juneteenth is. It's a different way of experiencing it and them being at the forefront of really getting, you know, becoming immersed in the event and learning about things, meeting new people, hearing about topics or even the issues that are going on in the community or how we are really trying to strengthen the bonds with the youth, because the youth is the future. So I just want this to be an inspirational day for them as well.
And when you're balancing that education and celebration, how do you kind of strike that balance with an event like this?
My biggest thing is that I am an art fanatic, and I think that art is a beautiful way of expressing so many different things. And I know that for a lot of people, it may be hard to focus on just like being lectured at, or, you know, it's sometimes it's easier to see people dancing and be like, wow, that's the message. They're invoking this message, this energy, this power behind it. Or, wow, this is amazing acting piece. I now understand what this day means, or I now understand what the people were going through back in the past. Like, I think that art is a beautiful way of expressing so many things that maybe some people aren't great at understanding if it was communicated to in words.
What does Juneteenth mean for Sullivan County specifically?
That's a really deep question. I think that we need more positive representation. And I think that this event is a great way of positively encouraging and educating the community. I don't think that there's a lot of cultural events, especially maybe that are not community-based, where they're like, hey, come out, it's free. We want you to come. We want you to be involved. We want your presence. We want your energy. We want your input. We want to help support you in any type of way. Come out. I think that this is a great opportunity to show the support for the community. I think this is how important Juneteenth is for Sullivan County. It's just the support.
And how can people get involved with the Sullivan County NAACP?
That is great. The best way to get involved is to follow our social medias on Facebook, Sullivan County 2187B chapter. Find us anywhere. We have so many different Zoom calls, membership meetings, where we are talking about so many different topics, the upcoming plans that we want to do, ways to be active, ways to support us. Join. Get a membership. It's only $30 a year, and it is important. And I think that all people should be a part of the NAACP, because it is a way that we are supporting the community and we are powerful in numbers. Like I said, it is important that the more people that we have, the more that we can make a change, and change is needed everywhere. Even though we have come so far, there is more work to be done.
Is there anything else that you would like listeners to know before they head out to the festival?
Come, bring your smiles, bring your great energy, bring your chairs, bring whatever, you know, we are there. We want to see you. We want to meet you. We are always open to connecting and collaborating as well. So even if you're just like, hey, I have an idea for next year, come, we want you. We want you here. We want your presence. And that's the only thing. Just bring yourselves.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
No problem. Thank you so much for having me, and I hope to see all of you guys there.
That was Star Torbert, the chairwoman of the Sullivan County branch of the NAACP. You can learn more about the organization's work and this year's Juneteenth Festival through the Sullivan County NAACP Facebook page. In Liberty, I'm Rebecca Hendricks for Radio Catskill.
Well, thank you, Rebecca, for that interview, and thank you, listener, for being here with me. I'm Jason Dolan. That is it for tonight's Local Edition. We've got Mr. Kusar Grace coming up at 7 with Music Emporium, followed by Ambient Barn at 9. Right now, stay with us for The Daily. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.